Hello, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time of day you are listening to us. This is the Bills Wire Wagon Wheel Podcast, presented to you by USA Today, SMG. My name is Matt Johnson, one of your hosts, and alongside with me every single week, my man, David. We are coming off of a very definitive victory last night with the Buffalo Bills defeating the San Francisco 49ers by a score of 34-24. David, first and foremost, how are you, my man? Secondly, how are you feeling after this one?
I'm doing well and feeling great, Matt. You know, we got a big win on Monday Night Football for the first time since 1999. The Bills are 3-1 against NFC teams this year. They've gone 9-3 in consecutive seasons now for the first time since 90-92. And their 22 passing first downs of the game tied the team record.
Yeah, it was a pretty solid day, for this team. Quite an accomplishment. Yeah, you said 99. I mean, I was 8 years old. Oh, no. Was I 8? Yeah, I might have been 8 years old when that happened. That was the Doug Flutie era, too, which goes to show you how long ago, how many quarterbacks ago that was. So there's definitely a culture change here in Buffalo. If it hasn't been apparent before, it definitely is now. The stigmas of the last, 20 years are definitely being undone by this team and operation that Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, and all the players that they have drafted and rostered. All the bad stuff is becoming undone, and these aren't the same old Buffalo Bills anymore. It's actually really refreshing to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting. One of the things that you and I have talked about a bit that I think really stands out is that on a week-to-week basis, they're setting records. They're putting up, significant numbers. For example, yesterday, Stephon Diggs reached 1,000 yards receiving for the third time in his career.
Yeah.
He had 92 yards receiving on 10 catches and 11 targets. By the way, efficiency. A lot of efficiency in the numbers yesterday across the board with the number of Bills players. Cole Beasley recorded the most touchdown receptions ever by a player 5'8 or shorter. He put up 9 catches for 130 yards and a touchdown, and he's had the best first 12 games of his career in receiving yards and receptions. So Beasley did as Beasley does. And Tyler Bass set a team record for the most points by a rookie or first-year player with 105 total points on the season. That yep. game against the Jets where he kicked us to a win certainly helped his cause in that case. But Trey White got his third interception of the year. His 16 total second-half takeaways since 2017 leads all NFL defenders. And my guy, Dawson Knox, had a super productive day.
He did.
He was 4-for-4 on catches, right? On catches and targets, showing the better hands again this week that you and I talked about, being an issue during the bye and something that he's going to need to be better at. And he scored a touchdown and added 2 stiff arms on Jason Verrett on a couple of his catches. We know about the growing legend of Dawson Knox stiff arms, and he went airborne. We got to see Super Knox yesterday. It was great. Isaiah McKenzie has third touchdown of the season, which is a career high for him. Gabe Davis caught a touchdown for the second game in a row. And then your player of the game and our Buffalo Bills starting quarterback, Josh Allen, goes 32-for-40, 375 yards with 4 touchdowns, tying a career high with those 4 touchdowns as far as tosses and picking apart the Niners' zone defense a bit. He had his 4th game this season with at least 300 yards passing and 3 touchdowns, which is the most in Bills history. Also, something to watch next week in our game against Pittsburgh, with 33 touchdowns now on the year, Allen is 1 away from tying Jim Kelly's single-season team record for total touchdowns, which is 34 that he had in 1991. So we could actually see Allen break that record next week against the Steelers.
That's intriguing. And I mean, that's a good sign of him trending upwards, right? There's just been this whole growth factor that we've all been claiming and hoping for with Josh Allen. It's actually been like that with a lot of the, it's what you want with any quarterback, but that 2018, that now, you know, very famous 2018 draft class, he's been, it's been step by step by step growing, where you look at some of the other ones, it's been step forward here, two steps back, and slight regression. So that's a great sign. You know, also, I mean, you're talking about records and stuff. We still have a few weeks left. We still have, what, 4 games left, if I'm not mistaken. Josh Allen also has the opportunity in this season to become the Bills' all-time single-season passing yards leader, which was Drew Bledsoe back in 03 or 04. He's the only one. Drew Bledsoe is the only Bills quarterback to ever eclipse 4,000 yards. And Josh Allen seems to be on his way so far in that one. A few more games. I know he's got some studly defenses coming up. But, again, these are great chances for him to set records. Keep setting the bar higher and higher, I think. You know, I think it's cool that we get to live through a team that, you know, we're going to be saying that, you know, people someday will be comparing their respective Bills teams towards this one instead of keep going back to the Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, Andre Reed, Bruce Smith era, which is all fine and dandy, but it's cool to have a bit of a modern team to compare yourself to. This team is firing on all cylinders right now. It's getting hot at the right time. It's being well coached. The errors that we all talked that we talked about in that bye week episode are cleaning up. They're cleaning up, and like it's looking good. I mean, we knew what this team could be on paper. It wasn't performing up to 100% the expectation, but they've done very, very well. So far this season, ever since I think after that Kansas City game, or even maybe even the Jets game, if you want to really go like that, they really blossomed into a Super Bowl contender. I think Josh Allen put his way back in the MVP candidacy. I don't think that's too far-fetched at this point, but I mean, this team is it's doing what you want. It's where you want it to be at this time of the year. You know, I get hesitant. I get very weary when fans start claiming Super Bowls 3-4 weeks into the season. And I get it. The excitement is real, that there's certainly that optimism and possibility, but you know, unless you're putting in these victories like the ones that the Buffalo Bills had last night against San Francisco, at this point in the season, the back half of the season, the back quarter, you know, those wins, yeah, they count for your record and stuff like that, but they don't mean much in a whole lot in the grand scheme of things. The way that this team is meshing, performing, I think that they have the firepower, the capability to beat anybody in the AFC, in the NFC at this point. It's just hopefully it's a matter of execution. If they can't get overconfident, this team is, you know, it's too good. I mean, offensively, look, they didn't have John Brown last night and they still look great. They still look great. And that's been an issue in the past. So I'm very, very incredibly optimistic for this Bills team going forward, especially like there was not one point where I thought San Francisco had a chance to win, you know, after the first quarter, I was like, Bills got this thing. It's a wrap. So I'm very happy with that, how they played last night.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I mentioned in recent weeks when we found out that John Brown was going to be out for a few games, we saw how much they struggled on offense without him when he was out a few games earlier in the season, and recognized that the key to that was getting more guys involved, you know, like Gabe Davis, Dawson Knox, some of these other guys, because you can count on Beasley. Yeah, you know Stephon Diggs. Is going to be Stephon Diggs.
Right.
And they've done it. You know, they've started to get these other guys involved, made a difference. And you're right about the comparisons to the early 90s Bills teams. It's incredible that we had one of the greatest teams in NFL history under Jim Kelly, under Marv Levy, you know, that only team in history to go to 4 Super Bowls in a row. And In the case of the quarterback, the only quarterback to accomplish that, and a number of other records as well. And so that we're drawing parallels by, you know, breaking some of these records on a weekly basis in most cases is really neat. You know, that we're really starting to kind of be that second great Bills team, become and build and grow into that second great Bills team. I'm very interested and excited to see what the ceiling is for this team. One thing that I was thinking last night, now that we've improved to a 9-3 record, and just looking at some of the playoff standings that as I think forward beyond this season really seems significant to me, is that we're playing for the division and we're playing for our playoff spot right now. And I love that. One of the things that really came to mind, though, is that a key to winning in the playoffs for the New England Patriots for years was getting that first round bye,
mm-hmm.
playing for that first round bye and earning that first round bye, that number one seed. I don't think it's too far-fetched at this point to at least, this is the first time that I would feel comfortable mentioning it as a possibility, but whether it's for this season or in the future, that the Bills could become one of those teams that, like New England was for years, you know, annually is competing for that one seed in that first round bye, because with the rule changes now, we used to have two teams that got that. Now,
correct,
only the one. So I think that that's a huge key to winning in the playoffs. We've seen how it benefits teams. That I think that that now becomes at least a realistic or possible goal now and in the future, which is very cool. I don't know if it'll happen this year, but I do think it's really neat that now we're in the conversation for that. It was great to hear analysts talk about how after Kansas City and the Steelers, they see Buffalo now as that team, you know, that's kind of in the mix there. And you're right about the draft class too. I mean, really, Baker Mayfield's the only other one out of that draft class that's really having, you know, a decent season.
Yeah, he finally got his coordinator. He finally got his coordinators, you know, right, his coaching right, and he's playing at a very high level. We knew that Lamar Jackson's ceiling might not be very high. He's a running type quarterback. Yes, the league is going into that direction of a mobile-esque quarterback, but still not ready for that mobile first type QB that Lamar Jackson is. Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's fun how up and down it's been. It really has, trying to observe this draft class. But I still think it will go down as one of the best. But, yeah, I mean, Baker's playing out of his mind right now after that game against Tennessee. But, Josh, it is crazy to think, though, that Josh Allen, I mean, that's five very, very, you know, they're world-class athletes. They made it to the National Football League. That's not easy. Not everybody gets to do that. But Josh Allen is the best quarterback out of that very, I think, it was an elite group of college quarterbacks, you know, with that. And Josh Allen, you know, and Baker Mayfield is obviously the de facto one coming out of that draft. But, you know, Josh Allen sat there for a little while. People had their concerns, and he's been the most consistent one. That's the kind of growth you want out of your quarterback is growing. Like, I'm confident with him under center. Last year, I was uneasy. Last year, I was like, ooh, I don't know. He's got to see these tendencies. I don't know. But, you know, I think last year after the way that, you know, Houston came back, we saw a new Josh Allen. He went and worked on his mechanics, his reads, and you know, maybe it's a part of Brian Daboll. Maybe it's Josh Allen making Brian Daboll look good. But Josh Allen, I think, has been the way you want an athlete or anybody to grow in anything. Josh Allen has hit every metric, I think, that you want. His mistakes that he's making are no worse than what Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers makes. We see it time and time again. He's under a microscope because he's the new guy. And maybe there's a bit of a Buffalo stigma as well, but he's hitting all the metrics. Like, I think he's not too far fetched to say that he's in the MVP conversation right now. If I had a tier quarterbacks, I actually did this a couple weeks ago on my other show, the 2-point conversation. But if I was tiering quarterbacks right now in 2020, you know, five different tiers, I would put Josh Allen in tier one. I would. He's playing that well. I don't think this team is where it's at right now if Josh Allen was there. And that's, I think, the marks of a tier one guy. Where, you know, you could think of, there's some teams where you're like, ooh, somebody else could be here and you get the same results, like their backup quarterback, or they could have made this move in the offseason and they'd be, Josh Allen is legit the glue that's holding this team together right now. And I don't mean that in a weird way, in a bad way, but like, you know, he's the sun and everything else is revolving around him when it comes to Buffalo Bills football.
I really like the way that Daboll is spreading the ball out on offense. I know that that's been a topic people have brought up and talked about a bit here and there over the course of our season. And we saw that again last night. Allen, there's things that I wonder about, right, mentally with players as they go into situations like this. Obviously, the game got moved to Arizona due to Santa Clara County COVID restrictions. It was originally supposed to be a played at home for the San Francisco 49ers, who still acted as the home team. But the Bills returned to the site of their game against the Cardinals, which they, quote unquote, won at the last minute, only to then unfortunately lose the game on the miracle Hail Murray, I guess we're calling it.
Yeah.
And I wondered if some of the surrounding circumstances would maybe help. Right? Like maybe help a little bit, like little intangibles, little things that might not normally think of, or, you know, like I said, just little mental things. Right. So, you know, the Bills having familiarity, having just played a game in that stadium, you know, only a couple weeks ago, a few weeks ago. And even things like the climate being similar. A lot of people don't know that outside of where I live. I live right near where Josh Allen grew up,
right
in California. And the climate here is actually very, very similar to Phoenix. Phoenix, we get a lot of comparisons to that. So I wonder about little things like that, if those things make a difference or not. And then even, I know it sounds funny, but being back in that stadium, right, with that taste that left in your mouth the last time you were there, losing the game that the way that they did, playing another team in red jerseys in that stadium, I wonder if they just went into that, you know, with wanting to get that one back and bounce back. And so I wonder whether those things would help a little bit in terms of motivation and just factor into the team playing to win. We found out right before the game that we were getting Matt Milano back, that he was going to be active for the Bills defense. And that was good. Tyler Kroft was still out on offense, and obviously they were still without John Brown too. And so I feel much better this time around during this 3-game stretch that we don't have John Brown. Seeing the way that they are getting the ball into the hands of other guys, also the way that those guys are playing a little bit better in those positions too.
Yeah, Gabriel
has me feeling pretty good going into the Steelers game.
Yeah, I mean, look how open Gabriel Davis was all night. Like I was getting, you know, we commented about this, I think, in our Slack chat, but dude was getting open all night. And you know, the San Francisco defense, yes, it is banged up, but I think it was getting healthier, it was getting better. And Davis, a rookie who's not like the most tallest, he's not the tallest, you know, most intimidating presence on a football field. His work ethic is very intimidating, but just looking at him, you're like, you know, and that's not disrespectful by any means, but, you know, and he's getting open and he's picking apart this defense. He's fitting through right through the seams. Did he have one? I know he had one, at least one touchdown. He might have had two, or he ripped off some big run. Like he ripped off some big runs. Like Davis had a good day, a really, really good day. And that's what we've been looking for. We've been looking for that guy that if John Brown can't be there, if he can't get it done, we need one of these other, you know, one of these other three or four remaining guys that we have rostered to be able to step up. And I think we all knew that Davis could be that guy, but you know, I would dare call it a breakout performance for him. You know, he was wide receiver three all night. That was his spot. That was certainly a spot. He owned it. He earned it. And he played up to expectations. I was very, very happy to see Gabriel Davis, you know, get that time. He's had a weird couple months of the season where he's been like, it's been pretty cold. It's been pretty cold. You know, in that regard, you weren't hearing his name as much, but last couple of weeks he's been playing very, very well. And I think that's a good sign. That's what you want, you know, with this team. And of course too, if they're willing to sacrifice, I've been trying to learn the game a little bit better lately. I've been trying to learn like formations and stuff. You know, that's good when you have 4 or 5 really good wide receivers that you could bust out in 4 wide receiver sets and stuff like that. And really, really throw off the defenses. That's what Brian Daboll's been getting good at lately, is throwing off defenses with weird trick plays and all sorts of stuff. And Davis has been proving that, hey, when John Brown comes back, he can, you know, this team can do something really, really cool. Some really fun stuff with it and really throw off defenses as much as they please. So that's what you need. That's what you want. This is the best time to be good right now. This point in the year, it's okay. It's good. Obviously it's good to be good in the first half of the year, but it doesn't mean anything compared to being good at this point of the year is basically what I'm trying to say. Don't count the chickens before they hatch. But this is the right time. They're getting hot right now. This reminds me, I'm not going to say it completely reminds me, but Tennessee got hot around this time of the year last year and made the AFC championship game. The way the Bills are playing, I know they've been having a really good season. They didn't have as many losses as Tennessee had last year, but the way that they are playing, they can certainly make a run. And, you know, I think this Pittsburgh game, we've already alluded to it a little bit. This Pittsburgh game that we're going to have this week is a bit of a proof. You know, it's a nice, another prove it. You know, the Bills have went toe to toe with already two of the top AFC teams in Kansas City and Tennessee. They played some other very good ones. So, you know, beat Pittsburgh, make that statement. It's a good way to kind of get yourself ahead and give yourself some confidence going forward as well.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how this game goes next week. I feel like we have a very realistic, good chance to beat the Steelers. Part of me almost wishes that they were still undefeated. Just because we had success against the Seahawks, it would have been nice to go out there and get one against Pittsburgh. But I'll take it. You know, anytime a team beats them earlier in the season, it gives you some potential insights as to how to accomplish that. Right. So that certainly doesn't hurt. And I think it's pretty cool when we're in the type of shape as a team where you hope for things like that. Like you and I have talked about how we hoped that we'd be able to see a changing of the guard in the AFC East against the Patriots with Tom Brady. And I thought that was going to come during the second game against New England in New England last season. And we almost did it. You know, it almost happened. I actually thought we should have won that game, but our game plan looked a little off. But unfortunately, Tom moved to Florida, I think, to prepare for retirement. But but yeah, so you know, we won't get that shot at that type of shot at New England. But it's okay. We're playing against, you know, Bill Belichick and his team, so it's very similar. So, you know, in that regard, when you're in shape, when you're in a position where you start thinking in terms of, man, I kind of wish they were still undefeated, or I kind of wish they still, you know, the Patriots still had Brady or stuff like that. It's good to be in that position. It's good to be at that point or at that place in terms of your team progression and what it is you're building. Is pretty good sign.
No, it really is. I mean, this Buffalo team is built for the long haul. I think that's the best thing about it too. It is built for the long haul. The Patriots definitely left a void. The lack of the Patriots left a void in the AFC. They're playing pretty well right now. I don't think they're a playoff team, but they're playing well enough to be like, oh, all right, they're still not too bad. So, yeah, this Bills team is built for the long haul. It is built to win beyond just this year, which I think is a big strength that they have. You know, even if this year for some reason does not pan out, there's the optimism is very high for next year. It really is. And they're going to be competing with the best. You know, I would love to see Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes become what for me as a Colts fan was Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, like that big money matchup that you can't wait to see because both these teams are winning their division and you know they're going to see each other at least once a year and probably in the playoffs. I really hope it becomes that. I think this has the chance to become something really special. You know, much like the early, you know, Bills and I would dare say Broncos going back and forth cross division, Bills and, you know, Bills and Raiders a tad, Bills and Oilers, like that. I'm all for this. I'm certainly all for it. Both these guys are young enough. They're, you know, the, we're going to see a long term. We're going to see a long term. And that's just the way that the Bills are built. This is a team that right now could find success. If you know, depending on drop off and all that, you know, at least a shoo-in for the next 5 years as being one of the top teams in the AFC, as long as they continue to develop well and keep, you know, making this roster as efficiently as possible.
There really is something to be said about player development, and the Bills are showing that. Their players are showing that. I wrote an article this week about some of Josh Allen's off-season program that he does with quarterback guru Jordan Palmer, and how they use digital mapping to fix Josh's mechanics. Now, people that have been following that know that Palmer has a quarterback group that he works with that includes not only Allen, but people like Sam Darnold, Kyle Allen, guys like that around the league, yeah, other young quarterbacks. And in the article, you know, I mentioned some of Allen's quotes that he gave during an interview this past week where he said, yeah, you know, we were looking at everybody's, I was the last person. And you know, by the time we got to me, they've been looking at each guy by guy saying, hey, yeah, you're doing the right stuff in terms of your mechanics, right? You're firing your hips off and the right, and then your arm and then your hands, stuff like that. And then they got to me and said, you know, oh, you're not doing any of that. So he kind of realized that there was an area that he needed to get in order, you know, in his mechanics. And we're seeing the difference. I mean, yeah, of course, adding Stephon Diggs to your receiving corps and drafting Gabriel Davis certainly helps. Adding a, you know, a tall guy like Davis with long arms, you know, and just a star receiver in Diggs to pair with a John Brown and a Cole Beasley, that certainly doesn't hurt. But also having a quarterback who getting his mechanics right, where it's improving his velocity, his accuracy, things like that. I mean, we're seeing it on the field. I think the improvements he's showing on a season-to-season basis now seems to even surprise the coaches in a good way. And we're definitely reaping the benefits of that.
We are. I hope that it doesn't ever plateau, because, I mean, the leaps and bounds from his rookie year to this year are absolutely tremendous. He went from a guy that people were very, very unsure of, that made a lot of rookie mistakes that, you know, probably hurt the team more than helped it his rookie season. Now he's, you know, he's the guy that everybody can depend on. You could just tell by his poise, the way he takes snaps, the way he controls this offense, that he's a lot more comfortable. He's a lot more confident. You know, he did that in a very quick amount of time. He put in the work for it, and hopefully he continues to. You know, I don't think we've seen the ceiling of Josh Allen just yet. And that's a very, very good thing. You know, going forward for the squad, a lot of optimism, just hope that all the other pieces that can, you know, in play and that can be put in play, continue to work and benefit this team long-term. But Josh Allen's a gamer. Last night watching him against San Fran, it's a very, very well-coached defense. I think Robert Saleh, I forgot. I don't remember how to pronounce his last name. He's a head coach. He's one of the best, like top head. He's one of the top head coaching candidates right now in 2020. Going, you know, the Detroit's government, like, straight up sent a message to the owner of the Detroit Lions, saying, "Hey, we think he's the best fit for this team." That's how crazy. That's how insane. Like, in highly regarded this guy is. You don't hear that often, and he's done very well with what he has. Last year was one of the, you know, a really, really good defense. For Josh Allen to control the game the way that he did, using a mix of the run, throwing the ball confidently, you could definitely tell there was very little hesitation. There was like one play where he took a huge drop, like 100 step backdrop or whatever. It was very strange, but I was like, it's one play. But other than that, he looked fine. He looked comfortable. His offensive line, actually, I got to give a lot of credit to the offensive line too. They didn't do too bad yesterday, and we know what they're dealing with. You know, we had an injury with John Feliciano, but they gave him plenty of time to throw and make decisions. And as a quarterback, that's all you can ever ask for. I was very, very happy with the way that, aside from, I think they had the one penalty where Mitch Morse didn't hike it or something like that. Or one of the, But I was very, very impressed with what this offensive line did to help out Josh Allen. And, you know, things are just clicking. Things are just clicking very well.
Yeah, and we hear often Brian Daboll being talked about as a head coaching candidate. And, Matt, you and I have had conversations about this, how, you know, you might get a really good offensive coordinator, just somebody who's having success with their system and their players on the offensive or defensive side as a coordinator. And they start to become kind of a hot candidate, or at least a hot name, you know, on the candidate front for head coaching positions. I got to be honest with you. I don't think Dable's ready for that. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean it in a good way. What I think of when I think of Daboll, and this is something they talked about when they first brought him on and drafted Allen, is that if you look at the success, because they are following this model in certain cases, just in certain situations, you know, Allen has said he studies Brady and he studies the offense because they're running the same offensive scheme. Daboll, you know, has talked about what it takes to get better at that, that you add a little bit to it each season, you know, to expand the understanding of how to execute that offense.
Yeah.
I think that a more realistic trajectory is a long-term relationship with the offensive coordinator for Allen, similar to Josh McDaniels, for example. Now, McDaniels is another hot candidate, by the way, as far as head coaching, you know, names coming up, and he seems to be almost annually now at least one of the 3 to 5 names that come up. We know that I think it was like a season ago or two seasons ago that Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick talked him into staying. And that's very possible that he might just stick around there for a while until Bill retires. Who knows? I don't know. But I do think McDaniels has a realistic shot at becoming a head coach again if he wants to. I know that if I'm not mistaken, I think Detroit wanted him last year and they ended up settling on Patricia because he decided to stay or just wasn't available. And now that job's available again. The Chargers would, you know, be another team that would make a lot of sense if he did decide to take a head coaching position, if that job does become available, though I love Anthony Lynn. I hope it works out for him there. So there's a lot of potential possibilities that do come up, and we've seen other teams bring offensive minded coaches in and the difference that that's made. We've seen it in Green Bay. We've seen it even in younger teams like Cincinnati. You know, obviously the Rams and Sean McVay have kind of become the standard for that in many ways than not, but we see Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona. Some of these offensive minds they're bringing in. Well, Josh McDaniels was kind of that before those guys hit the scene. So it'll be interesting to see, but I think for Daboll, man, I got to tell you, I think he's really found his niche. I don't know that he's ever had this level of success as a coordinator before. So right now it might be the best fit and the best thing for him. And certainly the best thing for Allen and the Bills. If he's, we talk about how somebody, they might be a coordinator, but they might not have the skill set to be a head coach. And that's not a bad thing. They might be just great at what they do, and what they do might be, you know, an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator. And I think that that's what Daboll is starting to tap into this season, is kind of starting to approach that stride, right, as an offensive coordinator. So I hope he's our OC for years to come, to be honest. I mean, you look at the success New England had having the same system, having the same quarterback for 20 years, executing the same offense and growing in their understanding of it. I think that that is a winning combination for the Bills. I think it's a winning relationship for Daboll and certainly for Josh Allen.
Yeah, I certainly agree. Of course, money's always going to be probably one of the biggest factors, but Daboll has definitely found it. I think his niche, you know, I've been very critical of him this year because, I mean, honestly, in the first half, his offense was kind of boring. It was kind of predictable. I'm still not afraid to admit that it was. And that's why the Bills offense stalled and stuttered in some occasions against some really good teams. But, you know, maybe I think if it not this year, I think maybe he gets another year as an OC. How could you not want to be a part of something like this? You know, this rebirth, especially for him, he grew up in Buffalo, right? He's a yeah. St. Francis graduate. I forgot exactly where, what city he grew up in, but he's a Buffalo. He knows what Buffalo was. And I mean, it all depends on what he ultimately wants to be. Of course, if I think I'm a, you know, if I'm a coordinator or if I get involved in coaching, I think the dream is always to have your own team someday, but I don't know. I feel like win a bowl, win a chip here for Buffalo, then you can possibly move on. But it's hard to imagine him being replaced right now. Like, where would Buffalo go? Where would they go to seek out a replacement? And how much of an impact would this have on Josh Allen? Which I think is the, you know, I think it's the ultimate concern. I think it's the ultimate concern. We've seen, you know, we see people switch coordinators and such all the time. And it's tough. You get used to playing one style of offense. You got to switch your game and learn some stuff. And you don't know what's right. You know, what's right, what's up, and you know, what's up from down. There's a lot that, you know, there's a lot that goes into all this stuff. So, but I think for the Bills' sake, it is important, but Dable's going to have to make a decision. There are a lot of head coaching vacancies this upcoming season. There's a lot, or there will be a lot, I think, by the time everything's said and done. So this could be a now or never type. Well, I'm not going to say now or never, but no, there'll be opportunities. But what I'm saying is, you know, he's got the track record. It's kind of like making a move on fantasy, trading away somebody when they're playing really good for high value. And I think Dable's stock is really, really high right now. It's the hottest it may ever will be, the way that Josh Allen has been playing and showing off. So, but there are a lot of teams that could definitely use a head coach with a creative offensive mind like Dable, certainly. A lot of teams that are coming out that are, you know, no coaches, their offense lacks identity. There's a lot wrong with it. So, yeah, but yeah, I think for the Bills' sake, you want him to stay. You very much want him to. Him going is a step back. It's a little bit of concern. I'm not gonna say a lot of concern, but it is a little bit of a concern. But yeah. So hopefully for Buffalo's sake, he does stick around. But I don't know for how much longer.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to guess right now, I'd say that relationship will continue. It's hard to see another situation around the league that's going to be better for him than the one that he's in right now. I really, unless the Chargers possibly, but even that, like I said, I think you're getting outside your lane a little bit by going head coach, and you wouldn't experience the same success that you would as an offensive coordinator in his position. You know, in terms of what it is that he's doing is very unique to the situation that he's in. So in that regard, I think he's in the best situation that he could possibly be in right now, and I hope that continues. This game, Matt, let's talk about this performance against San Francisco. The Bills looked good in the first quarter.
They did. They honestly did. It was competitive. They went through some stuff and some things. A little fumble by Zach Moss in the red zone, and was that? No, was the red zone? It was going back the other way.
First possession, but like just not getting it in at the end. But that and the Zach Moss handoff fumble. Other than that, they looked solid.
No, they did. They certainly did. Like even throughout this entire game, like yeah, the first quarter, like there's nothing. You know, that's the feeling out process. The first quarter is always the feeling out process. You're seeing what this team is giving you, and what you can take from it. And I thought they did a very good job moving the ball. It was competitive and. Thought they played really well. They gave up one touchdown, I think, in the first quarter. And, you know.
Yeah, the defense kind of had a little bit of struggle, I think, on that first Niners drive. They just ran the field on us and really kind of exposed sort of the run defense early. But fortunately, we tightened that up a little bit over the course of the game. So it wasn't quite as gash and run as it looked on that first drive.
No, I certainly agree, and that's been another big strength. That was one of the things we were asking for. Excuse me, with the bye week, is that run game getting tightened up and you know, the run defense being tightened up. But they did. Raheem Mostert is really, really good. I think, to my understanding, if I'm not mistaken, he's like one of the top three fastest clocked in players in the NFL today. That's how good he is. And I thought he moved the ball as, you know, as well as he possibly could have with some of the arrangements and everything going on. But the Bills stepped up and they made stops. Yeah, he got first downs here and there. He's going to do that. But the Bills' run defense has looked good the second straight week against what I think are very talented upper echelon like running backs. So I think that's a big testament, you know, to how this team is evolving, how it's coming along. That's what you want to do. That's what you want to do. And I get it. You know, it's San Francisco and the Chargers. I know the records don't really, you know, speak great football teams right now, but they are NFL teams. These are these guys who are playing running back for them are world-class athletes who are making a pretty penny. They're making a pretty penny because they play good football. And, you know, that was an important thing. If they didn't close that up, they closed it up and they made Nick Mullins one-dimensional throughout the rest of the game. And as highly as I think of Nick Mullins, he's not the most prolific passer. He loves his Brett Favre. Brett Favre is his idol. But, you know, we all know what comes with Brett Favre. We get the gunslinger mentality that ends up with some interceptions. And it certainly did yesterday. And, but yeah, the defense did a really good job taking away the run from San Francisco, which was the most important aspect for them going into this game.
Yeah, on that opening drive downfield, we looked good and we just didn't put it into the end zone. I wanted to see us get on the board there. And Allen made a beautiful fake handoff, by the way, at fourth and one in the red zone, and just didn't have anyone open. So that, you know, he's been extending plays a lot. He's also had time to pass, and that's something that was a huge factor in Tom Brady having the success that he had as long as he did, was that they invested in protection and made sure to give him time to throw the ball. And Allen's had that this season, and we've seen the benefits and results. You know, they just didn't get anybody open. And I think, unfortunately, that cost him that touchdown. And the pass just needed to be a little quicker at the goal line. There wasn't anybody open to throw to before a defender noticed. I loved the aggressive play calling going for the touchdown, but wondered if they shouldn't have just taken the 3 points kicking, since, yeah, you know, as you and I have talked about, those 3 points can make a difference later in the game, depending on how the game goes. But I love their confidence in how that game would turn out going for it in that situation. I probably, if it was another team or different teams, might be more situational whether or not they kick or go for it there. And then, like I said, when the Niners got the ball back, they kind of ran the field on our defense. We've said all season our defense needs to continue to be better against the run game. We saw that early here against the Niners, and they did shore that up a bit. So hopefully that will continue to get tighter and a little bit better here, because we do have teams like the Steelers coming up and want to be good against the run. That being said, we had a big goal line stand as well right before the Zach Moss fumble.
Huge,
and
yeah.
And that was big. I love seeing that. Anytime, that's one of my favorite things, is when you see like a good goal line stand by your defense, sends a message. And I love that they're protecting that, because if you hold them to 3 points instead of seven, or just get a stop and a turnover on downs, it's a beautiful thing. It's also like really boosts your team on both, and really lifts your team up on both sides of the ball, both on defense and on offense, and really kind of gets your team pumped up. So when we saw the Zach Moss handoff from the very first possession when the Bills got the ball back, you know, he nearly fumbled on the last offensive possession too on a tackle. Everybody has a day like that. Zach Moss has been pretty good in that regard. And so,
yeah,
giving the Niners back the ball though with 1:34 left in the first and a fresh set of downs at the goal line. That was the thing. And they capitalized. They put the first 7 points of the game on the board. And so that is a valuable lesson to be learned. And definitely not that there's ever a time and place that you want to fumble the ball, but certainly not like probably the least ideal place on the field that you want to do that. So yeah, there was a little sloppiness, a good play overall, a little bit of sloppiness there. a little bit of sloppiness on defense when the Niners got the ball back. But the thing that I liked, the reason that I said that they looked good, you know, in the first, they righted the ship, you know, they steadied the ship and played steady the rest of the game and just really played out the game well. And so that's the thing. We've seen times like even last week, right, when they struggled in the fourth quarter, when I saw that fumble on the Moss handoff, it immediately made me think of that sequence that you and I talked about last week between the Bills and the Chargers, where we were just basically, you know, getting the ball back and forth there on like four possessions, you know.
Yeah, it was very strange.
That immediately to mind, I was like, oh boy, are we gonna see that again? Is it gonna be one of those types of quarters? But fortunately they did the thing that, you know, we've needed them to do in those games, like the one with the Chargers, where things got a little wonky or out of hand, where they steady things back out, you know, and that's exactly what they did. And that was great to see.
Yeah, you got to control when things are getting crazy like that, you have to control the pace of the game. And it was a very costly fumble. Huge testament to the defense for that goal line stand. To make that, you know, to stop them. The turnover didn't help things much, but, you know, I like this aggressive style of play calling that the NFL is kind of leaning towards. I'll give you another Colts comparison. I'm sure the Bills listeners don't care much, but I will certainly say this. Frank Reich has been very adamant about going for plays on fourth and one. He likes to take out, you know, especially if it's in the right side of the field, or even honestly, if it's on the wrong side of the field, he still does it as well. He's been very aggressive of it, and I've appreciated that. I like aggressive yet smart play calling. It doesn't always work out, but you gotta look at it like this, you know, for the Bills to go for it on that fourth down, and regardless of the way they got stuffed, they had faith in their, you know,
right.
They had faith in their, you know, they had faith in their squad. They had faith in
it.
You know, they had faith in their defense in such. So, you know, that was a really good testament and sign to what this team, how the coaching staff believes in this squad ultimately. And, you know, so, I mean, I hope that keeps it, that continues. They've given me, you know, no reason to doubt that, but I do like aggressive play calling within reason. I like going for it in the red zone, and it's just, it's the way it's honestly the way football should be. It's in a good spot. So, but yeah, very exciting, very good, solid first quarter. Like I said, back and forth, gave San Francisco a little bit more hope than they probably should have. But I mean, it was all Buffalo after that. Once they got the lead, they just took right over. So,
yeah, I loved seeing the way the Bills answered back after that first touchdown by the Niners and, you know, immediately following that with the turnover that we saw too, preceded by the turnover. So, you know, the Bills turn the ball over at the goal line, Niners get it back, punch it in for a score, which who knows if they would have scored that touchdown if that had been all the way down at the other end of the field and they turned the ball over, right? The way the Bills defense was playing today, we don't know. But nonetheless, even after that first Niners drive where the Niners were charging all the way downfield, we stopped them at the goal line, turned the ball over there, Niners score, Bills bounce back, they come back, solid drive downfield. Allen kept a play alive and hit Diggs on a big completion downfield on first and 10. And Diggs showed his elite toe tapping ability on the tight window catch at the sideline that we've seen multiple times this year as well. And then Allen hit Beasley on a first and goal for the touchdown to even score. This is at the beginning of the second quarter now. And the defense backed him up on the ensuing Niners drive too. They got a good stop, forcing the Niners to punt, putting the ball back in the offense's hand with another chance to go for the lead with an even score now. 7-7, you know, the game's back to zero essentially, right?
Yep.
And they did have a close call and an interception. So that, you know, this, if there was one blemish on Josh Allen's day, he did throw a pick. And fortunately that pick got waved off on an illegal contact call on Richard Sherman.
Yeah. He
was called for it on Stephon Diggs, giving us the ball still, but also giving us a fresh set of downs on the play, which certainly helped. And then a few plays later, Dawson Knox, stiff arm, Jason Barrett, knocked his helmet clean off after a catch. I love stuff like that because it gets your team amped up. It was great.
It does.
Dawson Knox, we know about his love of throwing a stiff arm. And if that's not enough, later in the drive, Knox catches a pass from Allen in the red zone, takes it into the goal line, and just super Knox leaps over guys into the end zone. It was great, man. Touchdown Bills. The defense got another stop there too on the ensuing Niners drive, and or rather in this case, and the offense got the job done. And that's what you want to see is, hey, your defense showing up, your offense showing up, right? Both doing their job on each side of the ball. They had a really nice following offensive drive too. That included a catch by Gabe Davis to get the first down and plus yardage out of it, and to get the Bills in field goal position right before the half. And Tyler Bass adds three, putting Buffalo up 10 at the half. So two great offensive drives, puts Buffalo in the lead up by 10 going into halftime. Does this sound familiar, Matt?
Yeah, where have I seen this before?
It's like a movie that you saw one time and you're trying to remember. I feel like I've seen this before.
Yeah.
You and I talked about it over the bye week quite a bit. Is will the Bills be the team they need to be in the third quarter, right?
And it didn't look good at first.
In the second half.
It didn't look good at first. I was getting a little worried because the San Fran broke out the run. They broke out the run. I'm like, oh, here we go. They're opening things up. And they ran. They made it downfield very, very quickly. In quite a few drives, you know, I mean, San Francisco was right back in the game. They marched downfield, and ended up kicking a field goal. But, I was like, okay, you know, San Francisco adjusted really well in the third quarter. How are these Buffalo Bills, going to adjust in this third quarter? And then they answered back and they put a touchdown on the board. And that was like, okay, you know, San Francisco's done. They're limited in passing. They're, limited as far as running goes. The Bills are kind of snuffing them out in that regard. This one, it's all Buffalo from here on out. I mean, 24-10, I know it's still early. I know there's still a lot of time left, but I think even with, you know, if this San Francisco team was healthy, even if Jimmy Garoppolo was in there, even if George Kittle was in there, I still think that's too big of a deficit. Even as good as the 49ers were last year, I never found them to have a strong passing identity. Never, you know, he had a great running attack, but overall as an offense, they didn't really scare me. Defensively, they did. So Bills put up, you know, made this a, you know, 2-touchdown game early in the third quarter, and pretty one sided. You know, Allen hitting McKenzie too, another guy who we wanted to step up, hit him for a nice 23-yard touchdown. Got to get everybody involved though. Got to continue to get everybody involved. And Josh has done that. He spreads the ball around a lot. And I think that's the biggest advantage to this offense is that you don't know. I mean, you know, they got the roster, but you don't know who's it. Like if you're on a play and you're expecting one thing, he can hit you with four or five other capabilities. And that was a significant answer back. And they just dominated on all three facets of the ball. So,
yeah, I think one of the highlights for me too, because you know, we ask these questions now with the Buffalo Bills this season coming out of halftime, is will the defense hold up and will the offense stay steady? Like, will we continue to score? Will we continue to pad the lead? And will the defense continue to hold the other team and give us the best chance to win on both sides of the ball?
Right.
One of the things that I was excited about, this is the second time we've seen it this season, at 5:35 left in the third, Micah Hyde makes a great heads up play on a ball that pops out from a Brandon Ayuk catch on his way down to the ground.
That was wild.
Much like the Larry Fitzgerald one, by the way, that we saw the last time the Bills were playing in Arizona. It was Hyde's first interception of the season. I know that sounds crazy to be saying that, you know, in this point in the season, just because we're used to, you know, seeing more picks from him, but he added a good 33-yard return game and put the Bills back in the red zone. You know, on that drive specifically, some sloppy play and penalties in that red zone would ultimately cost them a touchdown opportunity, but Tyler Bass would add 3 points to pad the lead and put the Bills up 27-10. So here's why that stood out to me in the third quarter. Number one, you know, we've talked about wanting to see Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer more involved, you know, and showing up and the way that we're used to seeing, right? There's been times over the last couple of seasons where those guys are getting picks and turnovers on the regular. It was great to see him get that. That was fantastic. Again, a heads up play. You always like to see your guys come away from that. We've half joked, half been serious talking about the tip ball, you know, pop up interception, whether or not there should be a different categorization that than an interception, since it's not the fault of the quarterback, but the error, so to speak, to use a baseball term, is on the receiver technically. So, yeah. You know, just some things like that. Also penalties. We've talked about penalties and how it's hurt the Bills throughout the season. It didn't seem like there was as many this game as there has been in recent ones. And so I'm going to take that as a hopefully a positive sign of things to come, you know, that, because that is something that still, even in this game, kind of reared its head a bit and cost us a little at times. So, you know, that's something I'm hoping will continue to get tighter, because what you don't want is to be in a playoff game, right? You don't want to be in a playoff game and have that end up costing you. So the Niners, you know, they did fight back the rest of it. It's not like they just laid down. They continue to come out and fight, even on that next drive, you know, with a big pass downfield to score in the last minute of the third to make a game of it, pulling it back 27-17. And so at this point, the Bills have dominated on time of possession, which is another thing I'm keeping an eye on in these games, because that has helped them tremendously in past wins. So those are some things that stood out to me and kind of jumped out, even though the Niners made it clear they weren't going to lie down. They kind of continued to fight and were chippy the rest of the way. But at this point, if we can continue to play out the rest of the game, play it out on defense, but also play it out on offense and pad the lead a bit, we'll be in good shape.
Yeah, I certainly agree. They did it. San Francisco did not make it easy on Buffalo, I'll tell you that much. But this was a total. This is probably, you know, looking at this game, we haven't even talked about the fourth quarter really yet, but this is right. Probably the Bills' best first to fourth quarter, like total game performance, the way that they handled this squad today. And it speaks a lot. They're very well coached, and you know, San Francisco is, and it definitely speaks a lot to what Buffalo did on the day. But I mean, yeah, for every time a little bit of hope got rallied for San Francisco, the Bills would just punch them right back in the face. Right? It was just like a boxing match. it was like watching Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr. Like San Fran was like Tyson. They were trying to do stuff, and then Roy Jones Jr. was the Bills. He just hugged him, and that was it. Like, just stop. And that's, I mean, yeah. I think that's a pretty fair comparison. Even though we all believe Tyson won that fight, we all know that the Buffalo Bills won this fight. But they're just like, yeah, sorry, you know, sorry, kid, not this time. I'm gonna hug you. We're gonna put this lead. We're gonna take back.
That's some analogy, Matt.
You like that? You like that? Yeah, I got all the best analogies. I really do. I mean, yeah, they did. They rallied back in the third quarter. They made a 75-yard drive on five plays, and the Bills was like, nah, we're gonna do the same thing in 10 and take off almost 6 minutes of clock and give Davis a damn near a 30-yard touchdown pass. San Fran, they just could not get anything going. And I'm sure, I mean, I don't know how much the fact that they had a travel put an effect on that, but yeah, it just had nothing. I had a little optimism for San Francisco to make it a little bit more competitive after the Rams game last week, after some of their other performances, but yeesh, big yikes. But yeah, fourth quarter, they go into the fourth quarter here and they go 74 yards in eight plays. So they're driving, they're making things interesting and fun again. And Trey White gets a big interception, which is huge. Cause they were within scoring range. They were on the Buffalo 5 yard line. All right. Third and goal. This is their chance to strike, maybe make some things happen, but in typical Nick Mullins gunslinger fashion, he turns it over. And this is that's a big stop. And I think that might be one of the biggest things we want to take away from the defense this game is how really good they were in the red zone, right? We talked about the goal line drive. And then something like this, something where they've never, I'm not gonna say they've never been like great in red zone defense, but I've seen teams score on them that shouldn't have scored. And I think this is a big story for them out of this one. Bills at this point, they get the ball back. They're like, yeah, we're going to coast this thing out. They punt it away and they give San Francisco one little, they give the 49ers one little piece of fool's gold. And they're like, hey, score a touchdown. Josh Allen and company, they knew they had it. So right. By that point, so.
I think something that really jumped out on me was that Gabe Davis touchdown. We also, our conversion rate, we've done a good job converting to keep plays alive throughout the season. That continued on this drive, but it also continued in this game. We showed time and time again, the ability to convert, keep plays alive, keep drives alive. And that really kind of shined a low key shined in this game. It really was good. And I'm happy about that. That's something that for me, one of the takeaways from this season, even though we're not done yet, is that's been one of our greatest strengths all year. And that's a great feeling to be that good on converting, that good at keeping plays alive and stuff like that. It's been awesome. And as you mentioned, and I wanted to talk about this, Allen just throws this beautiful rocket pass to the right corner, hitting Gabriel Davis at the goal line on a 28-yard bomb for the touchdown. Allen's touch looked very good today against his own defense, but he also hit some tight windows. I saw a couple of them earlier in the game. They even made the highlight reel on different networks after the game. But this is just a beautiful bomb that he threw to Gabriel Davis for the touchdown to put the Bills up 34-17 with 9:55 left to play. And then, of course, the Niners continued to fight, but that Trey White takeaway pretty much sealed the game. We had a light drive after that to run the clock down. And then, they would come down and score and then try to do the onside kick. Diggs would fall on it, seal the win. Allen takes a knee, and that's game.
Yeah.
But that pass to Davis, we've seen some throws like that from Allen this year. And usually, like I remember last season, seeing him throw some bombs to John Brown like that a couple times. And it was great, but it's just neat to see us having another guy, right? Or a couple other guys. It's like John Brown times three now, right? Having these guys downfield that he can throw those to, creating options. When we get Brown back on the field, and we're able to have sets with him, Diggs, and Davis all on the field and whoever the next receiver is, McKenzie, having guys like that are going to be hard to cover. It's going to be hard to defend. And I feel pretty good about that going into the stretch as we look ahead to our final four games of the season now. It's a good feeling.
No, it really is, my friend. It really is. Yeah, I mentioned it. It was probably the cleanest victory this team has, the most dominant victory this team has had this entire, season. Honestly, it feels weird to say that considering that the Bills played the Jets, but that was the most top to bottom, just dominated. Like if it was a boxing scorecard, the Bills would have swept, undisputed. Too many boxing references this week. I don't know. I don't like that.
That's okay. I have no problem with that. Little known fact. My grandfather, Silvio DiCristofaro, great man, admiral in the Navy, boxing enthusiast, actually was the original source of memorabilia for the opening of the International Boxing Hall of Fame in Canastota, New York.
Oh, no,
so
kidding.
The man that you know built and opened the Hall of Fame consulted with my grandfather on it. My grandfather provided the principal donations of memorabilia to help open the Boxing Hall of Fame. So I have like free passes for life to the Hall of Fame as a result of this. Loved my grandfather, loved boxing. I'm a huge fan. So believe me, I don't mind the boxing analogies one bit. And speaking of which, we have a little bit of an AFC East title fight, so to speak. Right, or I'm sorry, AFC title fight. No, I'm so excited about the AFC East and us being in a position to win it that I'm so focused on that. An AFC title fight coming up, so to speak, against the Steelers. Now, you and I talked about earlier changing the guard type of games. Ben Roethlisberger has put together a Hall of Fame worthy career. Two-time Super Bowl champion. He's made the trip to the big game three times, and this might be the best window he's ever going to have, possibly, right, to win another Super Bowl.
Yeah.
With Tom Brady out of the picture in the AFC, but also, you know, in his playoff bracket. And also, he's had a lot of rest. You know, he came into this season with more rest and his body being more healed up than it has been in a long time, which for a guy his age – has got to be a huge help. And he's looked good. They've, you know, obviously been undefeated until this past weekend when Alex Smith, I'm just going to go ahead and call it now, the comeback player of the year. That's my prediction. Alex Smith came out and had a day. You know, the Washington football team came out and got a win against the undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers. And I know he had a stiff knee, which Roethlisberger was, and questionable before the game, but did play. Nonetheless, I like our chances next week. I think that we can win the game, and I'll be very interested to see how that goes. And Matt, we have a special episode of the Wagon Wheel podcast coming up later this week with somebody from across enemy lines, so to speak, that do you want to tell our listeners about that?
Yes. So we were approached. We're lucky, you know, that we have such a good supporting cast here with Bills Wire. But one of the former podcast hosts here, Kyle Salegi, received a message from a friend who wanted to reach out and see if Levon Kirkland would come on our show. For those who don't know about Kirkland, he did play for Pittsburgh for, I believe, 6-7 years. And he wanted to discuss this with us. So we're going to have him on. I'm thinking the episode, I'm probably going to have it ready to go Friday morning. If not, maybe even as early as Thursday afternoon, we'll see. But yeah, this is pretty cool. Very happy to have this opportunity. I don't get to speak to former players often. I've done it on my other show a couple of times, but for as far as Bills Wire goes, I haven't had the opportunity to do that. So it's going to be a good opportunity for myself and David. And, you know, pick his brain a little bit and compare, you know, we talked about before on air, I think Pittsburgh and Buffalo are two very similar cities with two very similar types of people, similar types of people. I think these football teams, despite, you know, awards and accolades and Lombardi trophies, I think I just feel like they are relatively the same, built relatively the same, very gritty, very tough teams. And a lot of comparisons between Buffalonians and Pittsburghians, if that's a phrase. But so this would be really cool to kind of discuss that with him, a man who played for Pittsburgh for many years and somebody who's, to my understanding, has played the Buffalo Bills at least once or twice in his career. So we're excited to talk with him about that. Again, we'll look for it on Friday morning. We'll hopefully have that available for you. But yeah. This is stellar. We apologize for getting out late. Late games equal tired Matt. So we got it out. We got an episode out for you guys. So we apologize. It wasn't out as early as we would have liked, but we did it. So booyah.
Yep. And we're looking forward to sharing our conversation with the former Steelers linebacker with you later this week. hopefully to provide some insight into the team. Like you said, Matt, very similar blue collar team culture, very similar blue collar grassroots fan culture between the two cities. Hopefully it can help us learn about, you know, the Steelers' defensive culture under Mike Tomlin, you know, keys to playing against it. I'm really excited to ask him about that. I've been an admirer and have respected the Steelers and their success under Bill Cowher and Mike Tomlin for many years. I remember watching them play in their Super Bowls when I was a kid. So I'm very excited to see that, have a chance to be looking at that type of a conversation and say, what do we want to ask this guy about? What do we want to know? And just have a really great conversation. So I'm sure that's going to be an awesome episode.
No, for sure. For sure. So that is a wrap on today's episode though. Like I said, we'll be back in a couple days with a little bonus content. Thank you so much for listening. As always, go Bills.
Go Bills.